The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy, out cold. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I am, but we are here. It is Monday, February 18th, 2019. I only know that because I'm staring at my computer. It is episode 191 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo is back east. It is 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hit the red eye from Phoenix last night. Mental fog in full effect, but we trudge onward. Ken Flo, what's good?
You know, if you don't sleep, it's basically like creating a tremendous amount of brain damage when you sleep. I just wanted to let you know
you're
encountering a tremendous amount of brain damage. I learned that on an amazing podcast, the Joe Rogan Experience. He had a really cool scientist on there talking about lack of sleep. So I feel for you, man. You got to get caught up on sleep this week, dude. Come on.
I do feel drunk, right? The last few weeks of this podcast have been crazy, right? So I drove through the night after the Super Bowl and then did the podcast on no sleep. Then last weekend flew from Australia, some sleep, but I'm all fucked up, right? But TJ had Invictus, so we had to tape that show. And all due respect, you know, radio show's no good without a good producer. So, you know, we work around TJ there. And then, you know, business calls again, hit that fucking red eye back from Phoenix. I was thinking I should grab some proper 12 whiskey before the show because I feel like I'm drunk. So
you're a savage, dude.
I don't know what I am. I know last week we did the first primetime episode in the history of the Anik and Florian podcast. This one feels like the first legitimately drunk one. I still got to pay off that power hour. I will tell you, I had to pay off another bet in Melbourne a couple weeks ago. I didn't talk about it here on the podcast. And that was a power hour as well. And I think I got like 57 shots in before I bailed, but it was good enough for the winner on this side of the bet. So, I feel ready to knock out our wager anytime we can get in the same place. Crazy, crazy weekend in Phoenix. Arizona really loves MMA, Kenny. There were UFC fans everywhere. Huge spirit during fight week. I know the live event crowd left a little bit to be desired, and I would agree with that. But, man, do we feel the love in Arizona and people coming up to me. All they care about is the podcast, right? It really makes you feel good. So that was great.
Awesome.
As far as this fight card and this main event is concerned, so for the UFC's three main events thus far in 2019, 32 seconds for TJ Dillashaw and Henry Cejudo, 0 seconds for Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum. The fight fell apart day of. And now 26 seconds for Francis Ngannou and Cain Velasquez. And each fight is its own entity. But as a sports fan, I get so jacked for these UFC main events. All three of those fights. Just so goddamn excited. And in all three of those fights, we have gotten 58 seconds of MMA action.
Yeah, listen, I think as far as the Henry Cejudo and Dillashaw fight, that is just the way that MMA goes, right? Yeah. I mean, the fight can end in an instant. That's the thing. That's what makes it so exciting. That's why you're at the edge of your seat. And, you know, of course, we've seen over the years that mixed martial arts takes its toll on your body. There's a lot of things that can go wrong. Your immune system goes down when you're making weight cuts and people get sick. And there's injuries, obviously, with just the nature of the training in this sport. And unfortunately, we experienced just kind of a freak thing in this fight in Ngannou and Velasquez, where Ngannou landed a shot. It was a nice short uppercut and knocked Velasquez off balance, and he tweaked his knee wrong. You know, it was really unfortunate because, like you said, this was a fight that I was looking forward to for a long time. And you know, the result, whatever, you know, I got my pick wrong. Who cares? The big thing on this was we wanted to see a fight either way. And it feels like we just never got it. And that's the problem with this one, right?
Well, I felt more shortchanged with Dillashaw Cejudo, to be honest with you. And I think we disagree a little bit on this main event, and maybe it'll make for some good conversation. So you tweeted and you just said that he knocked Cain Velasquez off balance. See, I think it was a little more than that, right? I believe Francis Ngannou is LeBron James. He is a freak of nature. He shakes your hand, you never forget it. This is a once-in-a-lifetime type of physical specimen that I can't ever recall being around before. So you're right. He did not separate Kane from consciousness. He was never out, obviously, right? But the nature of his power is such that it hurt Kane, resulting in the knee to buckle. I can't sit here and say whether or not the referee stopped the fight because he saw the knee go out and he stopped the fight due to injury. Maybe he's gone on the record and addressed that, or because he thought that it was the beginning of the end for Kane. But I just think that for Francis Ngannou, maybe he deserves more credit for, you know, some of the wrestling strides he's made. It's, again, a short sample size, this fight and the Blades fight. But I think that people are kind of taken away from the win a little bit. And at least when I see the replays, it looked like a clean connection to me.
No, and it was. He landed the shot. He clearly shifted the weight of a 240-pound heavyweight wrestler and threw him off balance. There's no doubt about it. Was it the shot that knocked him out or separated him from consciousness even for a second? I don't believe so. And actually, if you look at one of the replays, as Kane is dropping and he's on his shoulder, he looks at the referee and says, "My knee." So this was before that, but before the end of the fight. So, and clearly you see on the replay of the stress on the MCL, the lateral ligament there on the inside of his right knee buckle. And again, that probably wouldn't have happened, or most likely wouldn't have happened, if it wasn't for that short right uppercut from Ngannou. So you're right on that. I mean, it's not like he kind of just slipped and fell. It was because of the shot of Ngannou. And Ngannou does have that freakish kind of power. But he wasn't able to knock out Kane last night. And it's unfortunate. I wanted to see a longer fight. I wanted to see if Ngannou was able to stop that takedown. He did have the ability to at least get an underhook and stop Kane from at least one of those takedown attempts.
Right.
That was good to see. But I think for a lot of people, we wanted to see, can Ngannou, you know, do that for two rounds, three rounds, five rounds? And for Kane, we wanted to see, hey, is this guy the old Kane, or is he a new Kane, or is he washed up Kane? And we never really got to have any of those answers. So that's why, you know, it left us, or left myself, I should say, I speak for myself, wanting for much more.
No, I agree. And I do believe that Kane, and he said it himself, and we sat down with him. I had the best 15 minutes with Kane Velasquez we've ever had. He was verbose. He was energetic. He was excited to be there. More so than ever before in his UFC career. This was a different Kane Velasquez than we had ever seen before. Mentally, physically, his body, he was never more confident in his body. I mean, I couldn't even get that out of my mouth before his body gave out on him. I mean, it was just crazy how it all played out. But he just sat across from us full of conviction, and he just felt like Ngannou was very beatable with the right strategy. I'm just not sure how beatable this guy is, right? And I know Daniel Cormier thinks that this is a winnable fight and a good matchup for him. I can't speak to how Ngannou is going to be energy-wise, even when a round begins on the feet, round five in a championship setting, okay? But I kind of want your take on to what extent you agree with me that this is truly a man among boys, right? Just I am blown away by the physical stature and the presence of this larger-than-life human being, right? Like, so I want your take on that, and ultimately what you think about his prospects against somebody like Daniel Cormier.
Well, listen, it is clear that this guy has some God-given gifts that are extremely rare, specifically in mixed martial arts. This guy is a mountain of a man. He is built like a fighter. He has excellent speed, amazing power. And it seems like he truly is fighting with this renewed energy and this idea of going out there and having fun and not being gun shy. And, you know, we've been seeing that so far in his last fight against Blades and here against Kane. He is letting his hands go. He's moving very well. And I think that there is a tremendous amount of potential in that guy. He just needs to continually train every single day, especially on his grappling skills. And obviously his striking skills are always going to be there. His power is always going to be there. But if this guy is able to wrestle, you're going to be in trouble. And that's a fight, you know, immediately when I saw Daniel Cormier's comments that he's like, I'm not going to fight him. I'm going to beat him. Right. At 40 years old, or as he's approaching 40 now, and DC being a smaller heavyweight, that's a fight that really makes me nervous. I mean, anytime DC fights, it always makes me nervous. You know, he's such a nice guy. We forget how much of a badass he is. One of the greatest to ever do it. And I imagine that if he gets in on the legs of Ngannou, he's going to go for a ride. I mean, there's a big difference between even a high-level college wrestler and an Olympic-level wrestler like a Daniel Cormier. And with all the experience that he has in mixed martial arts, I imagine that he would give Ngannou a tough time. But if he doesn't get there, if Ngannou's able to catch him on the way in, and sometimes DC gets caught on the outside and on the inside, we saw what happened with Stipe Miocic. Miocic was landing some shots. Miocic does not have the kind of power that Francis Ngannou has. And if he makes that same mistake, if DC allows Ngannou to land a few of those shots that Miocic landed early on in the fight, it could be over. That's something that makes me very nervous. Ngannou's fist is probably the size of Daniel's head. I mean, it's amazing that DC has had so much success at heavyweight. Ngannou's a proper heavyweight, man. It's Brock Lesnar's size, but with a dude who has insane kind of power, and that's a fight that would definitely make me nervous, man.
I mean, Ngannou is just such an athlete, right? I can't even imagine what type of American football player he could have been. I'm not even sure that if he applied himself for 2 years, he couldn't play defensive line in the NFL, right? And maybe I'm overstating it, and I don't mean to take away from guys like Chandler Jones, John Jones's brother, who a couple off seasons ago signed the most lucrative free agent contract at that time, $82.5 million, right? But I see Francis Ngannou. I see him, you know, dudes like LeBron James, man, you know? And Cain Velasquez, if he wasn't the best MMA heavyweight or the consensus best MMA heavyweight of all time going in there, he was certainly one of the top three. That's why Ngannou's been calling for this fight since he lost to Stipe. But that Stipe Miocic fight, there were a lot of learning lessons. The Derek Lewis fight is such a strange outlier at this point in time, yeah. Right? It makes no logical sense. But the Stipe fight, you know, people lose sight of the fact that the last thing Ngannou was looking for was a way out. He did stay in that fight for 25 minutes. He wasn't covering up, with all due respect to guys like Frank Mir and Chael Sonnen, who just, you know, end their misery and live to fight another day. And Ngannou stayed in there for those 25 minutes. He has a mean, Absolutely. Nasty streak, right? We've seen him land an extra blow, Kenny, right? Like he is a classy beast, right? Like he's a classy guy, but when he's in there, man, like referee's going to have to pull him off there, you know? So there's an animalistic nature to him, and we'll see. Could be the first African-born UFC champion sooner rather than later. Anything else on that fight, Ken Flo, before we move on? I do think Velasquez will fight again. You know, I don't want to read too much into the way he left the octagon under his own power and seemingly walking pretty well, because I know you can walk around with a torn ACL.
Sure.
But hopefully the damage isn't too bad. He did say he heard a pop, so we'll see.
Yeah, I actually tore my MCL. I think who was I supposed to fight? Evan Dunham, I think, and I had to pull out of that fight. I tore my MCL training, and it was a very similar fashion. And for the MCL, if that's what it is, it's not something that they do surgery on typically. You know, rehab, rest, and he should be good to go, hopefully in a couple months. So my heart just broke for Cain Velasquez. He's such a good guy. He was so ready to go. He's been one of the most exciting fighters in UFC history. Certainly one of the best heavyweights, if not the best heavyweight of all time. And I hope we see him again in the octagon soon.
What's so strange for him is just that he put in the training camp of his life. He was conceivably never more prepared than he was, and his 36-year-old body held up through a very intense training camp, right? So for him, he's just out of answers, right? It's like you got to get through the training camp, and then you get to shine on fight night, and then the body gives out 20 seconds in.
And it's been a few things, John. It's been his shoulder. His back has been really bad for a long time. That really has been the culprit and what's kept him out of the UFC for a long time. So the fact that he was able to battle back from all of those things, and we see a short fight like this against Ngannou, just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and I'm sure in his. And I hope mentally and physically he'll be okay.
So much to get to on this main card, and Ray Longo is in the air right now, so he most likely will not be able to join us, so we might have to even table the Aljamain Sterling conversation for next week. But co-main event, this was one of the feel-good stories of the night. Paul Felder, a winner by unanimous decision over James Vick. So real quick to summarize Paul Felder's 2018. I don't know if he lost his father late 2017 or if it was in 2018, okay? But he lost his father. Then in April, UFC 223 was supposed to compete against Ally Aquinta. Instead, Aquinta got to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. So that was a real low moment, obviously, for Paul. Then he was supposed to fight James Vick. Vick got pulled into a main event in Nebraska against Justin Gaethje. You know, another kick in the dick for Paul Felder. Moves up to fight Mike Perry. Breaks his ulna bone in his right arm. Undergoes surgery, right? How's that? I mean, it's one bad break after the next. Yeah, he was doing commentary and sort of that leveled him out a little bit, right? But there were some really low moments for him, and it all came out, Kenny, emotionally after his first win. First win since the passing of his father, and dedicated the win to his mom, and you just got to feel good for Paul, man.
Absolutely, man. It was good to see Paul get the win. I thought that it was pretty dominant. Obviously, it wasn't an easy fight, but I had him winning all three rounds. I just felt that he had way more weapons, seemed to be the much cleaner striker, and, you know, really beat Vic up with that calf kick. I thought that was a nice strategy that hurt Vic and got him to really have to adjust and kind of disengage many times throughout that fight. I thought that you know, switching things up and going for that spinning elbow and spinning back fist was a nice choice. And a couple of those really hurt Vic. He almost got Vic out of there at one point. I think it was maybe the end of the second round, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was excited for Paul. I know he's had a tough last couple years. And the fact that he was able to get it done here against a tough guy in James Vic was nice to see. And for James Vic, man, it was pretty much the way that I saw it. I thought that Felder might have been able to even get the finish there in that fight. But James Vick just continues to not adjust as far as his hands and his chin and head position. He's got to fix that. I knew it wasn't going to be fixed by the time this fight came around, but that's something he really needs to address moving forward. Or not only is it going to lead to losses, but it's going to lead to him getting hurt and knocked out again. So hopefully James can make those adjustments.
And I thought the biggest factor in the fight was those calf kicks, Kenny, that really rendered Vic a one-legged fighter. I don't know how much of the time you guys were in commercial break and we touched on it when we came back, but Vic was so discouraged on the stool, and he's never that guy. You know, he's a beacon of positivity, and he was broken.
Dude, you can't step when you get hit in a calf. It is a brutal one. And again, I say it all the time. You don't address that kick in a fight like you do a traditional leg kick to the quad or to the outside of your leg, where you lift your leg up and block it. And he was attempting to do that. Now, here's what happens when you do that. Not only do you take the brunt of that kick anyway, but it knocks you off balance repeatedly. So. Yeah. I felt every single one of those. And Felder, you look at his legs, and I mean, Felder can kick, dude. Felder is a huge lightweight, as is Vic, by the way. Those are probably the two biggest lightweights in the game, period.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know how they make the weight, but that must not have tickled. Felder was smashing that calf in the same spot repeatedly. And actually, Felder's calf was blowing up at one point too on the other side. I think it was maybe his left. The outside of his left calf. I'm not sure what that was from, but either way, man, he basically rendered Vic useless throughout the latter part of that fight because of those calf kicks. I agree.
So Felder's probably going to take that number 10 ranking, and he certainly set himself up for a big one. I know he wants the Justin Gaethje fight. I think Felder's perfect scenario would have been that he finished James Vic early, and then because it's such an arduous weight cut, that he would have kept himself in fight shape and tried to be a backup plan for March 30th in his native Philadelphia. Of course, that's a main event between Edson Barboza and Justin Gaethje. Felder has a head-to-head loss against Edson Barboza. I just think Felder's not going to be a picnic, Kenny, for a lot of guys in this lightweight division. You know, I know as a fan, maybe I speak in absolutes too much, but I've been saying for 18 months or so, as Paul Felder now has won his fourth straight at lightweight, I think strike for strike, limb for limb, he's the biggest power threat in the 155-pound division. I'm not saying he's Edson Barboza necessarily in terms of some of the just talent and gifts and whatever else, but dude, this is a lifelong striker, a technical beast who, now that he's aligned with Duke Rufus, he's so clean with this spinning stuff. I mean, he's hitting this stuff right on the button, mixes it up beautifully on the feet. I think, you know, I know I'm not saying he could be champion necessarily, but I'm very interested to see what he'll do against top five competition. I really am.
I think Paul's going to be a tough out for anybody. There's no doubt about it. I don't know if I've seen anything in his fight that tells me he's one of the more powerful strikers necessarily, but he is a very good striker. There's no doubt about it. And I think that for anybody who decides to strike with him, he is going to give them a good run. That is absolutely true. He is tough. He has a pretty solid defense. And the only thing I would like to see him is just create more angles with his striking. And if he does that, then I think the knockouts are really going to come. Sometimes he gets caught up in going too forward and back a little bit too much. But, man, Felder has tremendous abilities. And I think can give anybody a really tough run in that top 10.
And got hit clean a couple times by James Vick, and certainly he has a chin. Vick is awkward
to go against. He is not. He is tough to look good against too. And I thought Felder really looked solid and made it a pretty solid and clean performance. I had it a clean 30-27 for Paul Felder, no doubt.
And last thing I'll say, you know, trains in the gi regularly with Daniel Vanderlei. He's never been submitted, you know, in 20 pro fights, right? He fought Charles Oliveira and was able to avoid submission that night. Oliveira's been on an absolute tear since. So going to be very interesting to see if Felder can get the big fight that he so craves. Cynthia Calvillo, Kenny, a winner by unanimous decision over Courtney Casey. And I think it's her call out of Tatiana Suarez that's probably more news worthy given our time constraints. This just speaks to who Cynthia Calvillo is, right? And I thought this fight against Courtney Casey was maybe closer than the odds would have had it. But she immediately calls out Tatiana Suarez, who's the best wrestler in the division and the toughest fight for most of these women. All the respect in the world for Cynthia Calvillo after a big win for her to move to 5-1 in the UFC.
Yeah, listen, it's amazing what Calvillo has done and against the kind of experienced competition that she's had. Calvillo is as tough as they come. She's not afraid to trade. She went against a girl in Casey who was much taller, much stronger, and still got it done. And Calvillo has improved her striking a great deal. I was looking forward to seeing what would happen if she was able to get the fight to the ground. I thought she would have a bigger advantage against Casey on the ground, especially if she was able to get that top position. But she's turning into a very, very good fighter, and she's doing good things over at Team Alpha Male. And I look forward to seeing how she develops. And the fact that she's had, all these fights against the tough competition early on in her career, she is only going to get better.
Crazy that she wants Suarez right now.
I know. I mean, who's calling out Suarez? It's like she's the Habib of that division.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised. And it just shows how confident she is against Tatiana Suarez, man. That's pretty wild.
So we sat down with Crone Gracie on Friday, and immediately, 60 seconds in, I was like, this guy's special, right? At that point, I hadn't seen UFC Destined. I had seen some footage, but I had never heard the man talk, right? There is something special about this dude. He walks into the fighter meeting. He's like, John, let me see that 209 tattoo. I was like, oh. But hey, man, this was a special effort, I thought, against a 19-time UFC veteran. I would defer to you on everything about this fight and everything about Crone Gracie moving forward. But as Dominic Cruz said on the broadcast, he welcomes you to come into his guard, right? So he can move forward without fear. Nobody's going to be trying to take him down. I'm excited, man. This was fun.
Yes, exactly. And I agree with you, man. I think Crone does have that certain special quality about him. There is an energy to a Crone Gracie that when you meet him, you're not sure what he does, but you know he's damn good at it. I think that comes down from his lineage of his legendary father, Hickson Gracie. Imagine having to be in those shoes in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community and dealing with that kind of pressure, being essentially Michael Jordan's son, and you decide to play basketball at a high level and everyone is expecting you to be MJ. That's the kind of pressure, and those are the kind of expectations that Crone Gracie had to deal with. And you know what? He pretty much lived up to them. That's how good Crone Gracie is. And he was a guy who really had to deal with that and competed against many of the best Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competitors in the world. He proved himself to be that without a doubt, and now trying his hand at mixed martial arts, and I thought it was a pretty solid debut for him, man. I think the biggest mistake for Caceres was throwing that long, wild hook. That gave Chrome Gracie the ability to get around to the back immediately, and from there, the fight was essentially over. When we were watching here, we knew it. Basically Chrome was going to get to his back, and he was going to finish, and that's the difference between a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, because Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, you see them everywhere. There's a lot of them now. That's not really such a big deal, but there's a difference between a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, a very good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and a world-class, world-champion-level Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And Chrome Gracie is just that. He made it look easy. Once he gets to your back, it was over, man. There was nothing Caceres could do. There was some high-level stuff going on, beautiful control, and that's what Chrome Gracie is going to bring to that division, one of the best Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guys in the world. And I would put him, obviously, right there at the level of a Damian Maia, a Jacare Souza, a Ryan Hall.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Guy was training with Ronnie Yaya extensively when he was 16 years old. He doesn't remember his life without jiu-jitsu. And there's been pressure applied to him in the Hickson shadow, obviously, his father. It's amazing how much I learned about Hickson and Elio Gracie just getting ready for this show. It's fascinating stuff. I think what's interesting for Crone is that every time he sits down in an interview setting, it's all about the Gracie family, and you're going to be the first fighter potentially to win a fight since Hoyce way, way back in the day, right? Because Holes and Hozier were unable to win in their lone appearances. Same can be said for Henzo, right? So I think for Crone, there's part of it, part of him that wants to sort of break out and forge his own identity. And I think if anyone's capable of doing that, it really is him. I mean, he certainly has a lot of respect for his lineage, and it's certainly a powerful influencer for him, as is the death of his brother, Hoxson, of course. But, man, I just got a special feeling from this guy. So in terms of immediate challenges, I think the one thing for Crone that I like is that I feel like he's a big game player. I don't think pressure is going to bother him. He wants the big fights, and he wants them ideally by March or April. What would you like to see? I know we talked off air. You think maybe Ryan Hall, which was suggested by Dan Hardy, maybe a little bit too soon right now. Would you like to see him fight a wrestler, a BJJ guy? What do you think Sean Shelby will do with Crone Gracie after what we saw Saturday night?
That's a good question. You know, I think there's a lot of possibilities for Crone Gracie. I think we saw him in there technically against another striker. I would like to see him against either another like another grappler. I think that would be interesting to see how he does in those 5-minute rounds against another grappler, like a wrestler, a grinder. I think Crone is good enough to be able to submit anyone in that division. It's tough, right? Because that's only his fifth fight. That's the other thing. It's only his fifth fight at the end of the day. Yeah. Overall, his first fight in the UFC, it sounds like he wants to stay pretty active this year. I'd like to see kind of maybe a wrestler, striker type guy. Even Crone kind of said, I wish they gave me someone tougher than Alex Caceres. And Caceres has a ton of experience in the UFC. Yeah. Maybe not the best guy out there in the division, obviously, but you know, I thought that it was pretty well matched for his first UFC debut. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what direction the UFC goes. And I do think that Crone could absolutely be a star in that division.
I'm just going to rifle down from 7 down the rankings at featherweight. Cub Swanson, Mursad Bektik, Josh Emmett, Ricardo Lamas, Yair Rodriguez, the Korean Zombies, Abit Magomed Sharipov, Darren Elkins, Calvin Kattar. Hopefully that didn't mess with the audio as I just looked that up. But a lot of those guys are matched up already. But I think they're going to expedite the process with Crone Gracie. We'll see. But you're right, only his fifth pro fight. But I'm all in. Vicente Luque, Brian Barberina. I mean, this one is just – this is the type of fight when you finish calling it. And you can speak to this when you have 4 fights thereafter. Part of you is like, man, right? Because that takes a lot out of you to call a fight like that, and just a great showcase. I'm so glad our first main card on ESPN, Kenny, that we had a fight like that, right? A fight of the year type. Just next level toughness from these two guys, and Vicente Luque absolutely leaves, for me, a bona fide welterweight contender.
It was ridiculous, dude, as far as the kind of toughness and power that they showed in that fight. I would say that probably 80% of those punches were knockout blows. And the fact that they were able to absorb that many shots, like those many shots, like, it's crazy. They were going upstairs, downstairs, leg kicks. Brian Barberena, it seemed like he was his head was on a swivel with some of the shots he was eating from Luque. And then he would just turn around and throw a combination of his own. These guys basically stood in the center of the octagon and just traded blows. I would never recommend any fighter to do that. It was essentially a hockey fight.
I knew
fight,
that was coming.
But I would never be able to do that. I would never, even if I wanted to do that, John, even if I was like, screw it, I'm going to just sit there and trade blows, I would laugh. Maybe 3 seconds. I do not have that kind of ability to absorb that. I mean, I don't think I do anyway. Like, right. Those guys are just straight savages. And the fact that they were able to throw that amount of strikes and eat them until there was no way I thought that fight was going to go past the first round, let alone crazy. Go into the third round. It was just ridiculous. Those guys are savages.
So, and neither guy was all that hurt. I mean, there were little moments there, but even when Luque got knocked down, he recovered very quickly, right?
Yeah.
When we talk about the long-term effects of a fight like that for those fighters, sometimes it's hard to quantify because Barberena is just this goddamn it hard-headed American farmer who eats it as if I'm the one throwing the punch. You know what I mean? Like as if it's his 10-year-old son throwing the punch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know obviously in terms of longevity, right, as Luque is 2 years, as he said, away from his fighting prime. He's won 8 of 9, finished almost everyone. But how do you quantify what type of price there is to pay when the guy doesn't seem to get hurt by these power shots?
Dude, well, here's the thing. From what we've seen, there was nothing that looked like they were hurt too badly, but man, that ending sequence, first of all, there's no doubt that Brian Barberena was hurt from that. It actually kind of turned his head around. He looked kind of straight down to the mat at one point, and then the way that he got finished was pretty brutal as well. But that shot that he ran into, I don't think is going to do him any favors. And Luque ate a lot of shots as well. So from what we could tell, it seemed like they were fine. But man, again, as far as brain damage and those things, we could potentially not see those things for a little while. So I hope that they don't go right into sparring for a long time. If I'm their coach, if I'm their friend, if I'm their family member, I tell them to stay away from the gym for a long time. Don't do anything. Relax.
Exactly.
Even if, you know, you feel fine or whatever, you could feel dizzy spells later on. You could actually have a concussion. You never know. But man, that was a classic fight. But my goodness, I hope those guys are okay and don't suffer any damage from that fight. But the crowd seemed like they were going nuts. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, crazy, crazy fight, and good for those guys. And you're right. I think if Luque, I know he's wanting to expedite the process a little bit and try to get a ranked name, but I do think for both of those guys, some time off would serve them well, and certainly an easy pick for fight of the night. Big win for Andre Feely, obviously, by unanimous decision over Miles Jury. That's a much improved fighter there. Aljamain Sterling we will get to next week with Ray Longo, but Aljo is absolutely a bantamweight contender. I couldn't be happier for him. I just want to get your thoughts on Manny Bermudez real quickly before we get to the Prague selections. So South Shore Sport Fighting, by the way, Rockland, Massachusetts. Bill Mahoney, I believe, the head coach there.
Yes.
So Manny Bermudez, 13-0, 14-0, whatever he is now. Outstanding submission guy, BJJ application in mixed martial arts. Absolutely love it, right? But he weighed in 4 pounds over the bantamweight limit, and that is a huge part of the narrative of this fight. And I'm probably going to ask you another unanswerable question in terms of the advantage or, you know, if there's something like the extent to which he suffered or didn't when he weighs in, you know, an hour and 15 minutes or so before he has to, right? I have a real problem with this, right? Because we've seen instances where guys weigh in early and they don't suffer up until 11 o'clock and they don't suffer down to the weight class limit like their opponent has to. And then they still compete at the weight class. There's a small financial penalty, but when you're a small purse fighter, a couple fights into the UFC, it's not a big financial penalty. And you get match made moving forward as if you have a bantamweight win. Now, I'm, you know, born and raised in Massachusetts, right? I like Manny Bermudez. I think he's a special fighter. But this has a huge stain for me to miss that badly, to weigh in early. You know, I know he obviously learned some hard lessons, and maybe he'll make a statement by weighing in on championship weight next time around. But if he gets a big, big fight now, I have a competitive philosophical issue with that.
And you should. Again, you're never going to see me make excuses for a guy not making weight. And it wasn't, again, like you said, it wasn't just like 1 pound. It was a few pounds. It was 4 pounds, right? 4 pounds or three pounds?
Yeah, four.
Yeah, so it's 4 pounds. So there's no excuse for that. There's no good excuse for that. And the fact that he's going to get a win against a guy who did make weight, something needs to be done, I think, a little bit more than just taking away a percentage of his purse. You know, I think this is the point where the UFC needs to start to ask themselves, should we allow these guys to even compete? Or if they do fight, maybe they fight, but it's always rendered a no contest. That person right. can never get themselves a win because, again, you know how it goes, man. You're a sports guy way more than I am. We forget about these little details. At the end of the day, you're going to see a W on his name, and the guy who fought him is going to have that L, and that's a shame. And I did not see that fight. I believe I was in the air when that fight transpired, but it's an awful situation, man. I hate seeing guys not make weight, and seeing the other guy make weight and suffer through that is awful. So I think the UFC should do something about it, or the commissions should do something about it, where they give that person a no contest or something, but it shouldn't be a W. And I'm not sure it should be an L for the other guy too.
Right. Right. There are a lot of layers to it, right? You feel for Benito Lopez. I'm not sure if the result would have been any different. I really think Manny Bermudez's submission game is going to be very problematic for a lot of people. But the issue, Kenny, is right, and you know this as well as anybody, but there are a lot of contracts to satisfy. So when these fights are booked, the UFC wants these fights to go on, right, to give these guys as many fights a year as humanly possible, given the constraints because there's so many fighters on the roster, right? So if you tell Manny Bermudez that you're going to compete tonight, but you can only get a no contest or a loss, right, he's not incentivized to fight. And that, I think, is the only holdup, because you're absolutely right. At least in terms of the bantamweight division, it's got to be a no contest, right? It can't be a win, because that would be the only logical penalty. So I don't think it's going to be done, but I don't know. It's just a really unfortunate thing. And, you know, for Manny Bermudez, I think the ceiling is high, but for me, it was just a tough fight week for him. And thankfully, he was contrite about it after the fact and showed some good sportsmanship and went over and apologized to the Lopez corner. But all right, well, crazy weekend in Phoenix, and the hits keep on coming. The UFC making its first ever trip to the Czech Republic, February 23rd for UFC Fight Night. Main card on ESPN+. And the main event could feature the second best fight of the month. I say that because Vicente Luque and Brian Barberina, it's going to be tough to top for the best fight of the month. But Polish light heavyweight Jan Błachowicz has won four straight. A lot of bonuses along the way. He faces the heavy-handed Brazilian machine, Thiago Mejeta Santos. That's the headliner in Prague. No matter who you pick to win this one, MyBookie is the only place you should be betting, with big deposit bonuses, 48-hour payouts, and an easy-to-use mobile site that I can speak to personally. MyBookie smashes the competition. In addition to betting on every UFC fight, you can also wager on the NBA, March Madness, even the Rotten Tomatoes scores for this month's new movies. I use MyBookie.ag every day. I don't know what else to tell you, right? I swear by the site. I use it. I'm an avid sports gambler. Don't call me a degenerate. I'm all about it. MyBookie.ag. And you can try for yourself. Visit MyBookie.ag today. If you deposit now, MyBookie will give you a 50% sign-up bonus just for entering the promo code ANIK. That's promo code ANIK, A-N-I-K. Bet with the best only at MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. Been whacking some college hoops lately, so hopefully we can keep that train going. But overall, you know, when a Boston team wins a championship, Ken Flo, I am losing a lot of money. So when the Red Sox and the Patriots both win titles within 100 days, I don't even want to get into how much we paid for those titles,
but it's paying off. It's paying off. Obviously.
It is. It's paying working off. For it's us. Paying off, you know, and my wife doesn't listen to the podcast. So she doesn't know that we had $1,500 on the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. All right. Prague beckons Saturday night. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fight. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, Team Florian led it 9-8 going into UFC Phoenix. Sugar Shane Tara takes down the flow 6-4. See, all these folks have to do, Kenny, is beat you once, right? And they live with that forever.
They do.
You got to live with that as well. And I think what makes matters worse, and we'll get to our guest picker, Wes, here in 30 seconds, but the difference maker was Aljamain Sterling at plus 140. So Ray Longo walked up to me and said, "You give Ken Flo absolute hell for picking Jimmy Rivera." So here's me giving you hell. Ray is in the air right now, so we'll see if we can track him down before the end of the show. But nice lead now for Team Anik. It's a point. Czech Republic Saturday night. Main card on ESPN Plus. Four picks for you today. With us to make them, Wes Stowers. I probably screwed that up, Wes. How do you pronounce your surname, kid?
No, you got it just right.
Stowers, amazing. See, I'm telling you, $50. I get $50 every time I pronounce a guest picker's name
you
on the first try. Wes, thank you for listening to the show, for coming on. Where are you joining us from today?
I'm from Oak Hill, West Virginia. I'm a big fan. Thanks for having me on.
West Virginia represented today on the Anik and Florian podcast. I love it. So I hate to break the news to you guys. There are no main card odds as of this taping. So soon at mybookie.ag and everywhere else, you'll be able to bet on these fights. Maybe by the end of the show, we can update. But we just got to pick the fights. I will adjust the odds accordingly. Not ideal, but we trudge onward. So first fight at bantamweight. I like this fight. 26-year-old Russian Pyotr Yan. This dude looks like the man, Ken Flo. 3-0 in the UFC. Huge finish of a very tough Douglas Silva Deandrage back in December. Puts his 7-fight win streak on the line against the UFC-tested John Dodson. Wes, I don't know. I'd expect Yan to be a slight favorite here or maybe close to a pick him. Who do you like here, Pyotr Yan or John Dodson?
I kind of had the same feeling. I like Yan a lot. I think he's an up-and-comer here. I don't think that we've seen the best John Dodson in his last couple of fights. I think that he is slowing down just a little bit. And his style of fighting, I don't think that's good news for him. He's kind of a blitz fighter. He's one of those that he kind of gets you to fall asleep and then he blitzes right forward on you. In that Jimmy Rivera fight, it seemed like he kind of got rolled to sleep a little bit by Rivera. He was kind of backing up the whole time. Definitely not his best performance. I see this one going Yan's way. I think he's going to kind of do exactly what Jimmy Rivera did, just kind of slowly pick him apart. Dodson is always dangerous. He's always got that left hand ready to go. But I think Yan's going to get a decision here.
All right, Pyotr Yan, the pick for Wes. Ken Flo, 15th UFC appearance for John Dodson. He's alternated wins and losses over his last eight. Hasn't fought since a decision loss to Jimmy Rivera. That was back in September. I just think we need to see more offense out of John Dodson and maybe Pyotr Yan, who's an animal, is the guy to bring it out of him. What do you think about this one at 135 pounds?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to tell what's going on with John Dodson. Is it the fact that he's slowing down, or is he losing motivation now that he's not really fighting towards trying to become a champion in that division anymore?
Right.
So he has been fighting a while. I think maybe his motivation has gone away a little bit. Maybe this guy, Pyotr Yan, is the guy to kind of bring it out of him. I don't think so, though. I was really impressed with Yan in his last fight against Douglas Silva de Andrade, who is a very tough fighter in his own right. But Yan just beat him up. Like, it wasn't even a fight. He literally beat that dude up, and I was so glad that they stopped the fight. You don't see that very often.
Yeah.
And I was glad that they stopped it. It was a brutal beating. So I'm going to go with Yan. I think Yan gets it done. You know, I don't know if he can finish Dodson. Dodson tends to not engage as much, but I think Yan does get it done.
And maybe he'll be closer to minus 180 or so. It's always fun to try to predict what the lines are going to be, and maybe we'll be way off. But we will proceed as if Piotr Jan will be the betting favorite there. All right, light heavyweight also making his 15th UFC appearance. John Volante coming off a win. He draws Mikhail Oleksijczyk. Wes, what does your research tell you here about this one at 205?
So I had to do some digging on Mikhail here. I remember his fight against Roundtree. He showed a lot of heart in that one. Got a little rock, got a nice little cut early on. But fought through it, ended up getting a pretty dominant victory. That one was overturned with a banned substance test, a positive test there. So he's coming off a big layoff. I think that Volante's pressure, his constantly in the face, which does leave him open to being knocked out. We've seen that a couple times, but I think his pressure is going to give Mikhail a little bit of issue. I'd say Volante is going to end up getting the finish later on in the fight.
All right, John Volante there. So, Kenny, four straight split decisions for Volante, and, you know, he's rolling his eyes after all these fights. He's won two of them, including the last one. And you heard Wes mention for Oleksijczyk, the win by decision over Khalil Roundtree Jr. back in 2017, overturned to a no contest, popped for clomiphene. You know what? I could use some clomiphene right now, actually. There we go. Kenpo, give me a winner here. John Volante, Mikhail Oleksijczyk.
Oleksijczyk. Wow. All right.
I'm going to pull up the audio file while we are talking and see.
Oleksijczyk. Listen, man, I think Volante has a tendency, obviously, of fighting in these kind of fights where they're always close, and he always puts himself on the precipice of getting knocked out in a lot of these fights. Oleksijczyk, I think, is a very good striker. When he starts to trade, I think that he probably doesn't have the same kind of power as a Volante, especially early on. But I think he's going to be a little bit faster. I think he throws straighter punches. I think he comes in pretty well conditioned. And I think Oleksijczyk will get the win against Volante by decision.
All right, co-main event, guys, at heavyweight. Stefan Struve actually once told me he wanted to be the first UFC fighter to 50 UFC appearances. And at that point in time, as a heavyweight, he looked, you know, maybe like he could get to 35 or so. But of course, he's had some health issues, some of them scary ones. Makes his 22nd UFC start here, Wes. He's lost the last three of them, taking on Marcos Rogério Paisão de Lima. He returned to heavyweight last year, won a unanimous decision over Adam Wieczorek. Who do you like here in the co-main event, Wes?
This one's a tough one for me. I mean, you look at Stefan Struve. He beat Stipe Miocic at one point. Looked like a world beater. 7 feet tall. But it blows my mind. It seems like he still struggles to use that range. Just throw a few jabs here and there. Keep people at distance, but hasn't really got that down yet. He has a clear advantage with this fight that goes to the ground. Stefan Struve's submissions are next level. I think that's a clear path to victory for him. Can he get it there? That's going to be the issue. His chin has been a little questionable in his last couple of fights. But I see this fight going to the ground, and I see Stefan Struve putting on a choke and getting the finish.
Wes has done his homework. I like that West Virginia drawl as well. You beat Kenflo, you're getting a return invite. I mean, that's a slam dunk. All right, Kenflo, true or false? Marcos Rogério Paisão de Lima fought at middleweight in Peru in 2013.
Dang. I mean, that's kind of a random fact, I would
right,
say.
Like, why
Peru.
Would you, right, like, yeah, why would you make that up, right? And
yeah,
tell the Peruvian that happened if it didn't.
He fought as a middleweight. He's a big dude.
He very much is a big dude. He loves missing 205, so now he's a heavyweight.
Right.
No denying the pop, you know. We'll see if Stefan Struve can, you know, use that jab. Joe Silva's going to be sitting somewhere in West Virginia just pulling his hair out when Struve's not using that length. What do you think here about Paisão trying to go to 2-0 since moving back up to heavyweight?
Listen, I'll be pulling out my hair with him. You know, Stefan has been one of the more frustrating guys to watch throughout his career because he got into the UFC so early. He had all this, you know, all these gifts as far as his size and But I don't know if he really just put in the work. And that's what I struggle with. Anytime he fights, I mean, it's like throwing the dice. And Marcus Rogério de Lima is another guy that kind of when he fights, he kind of throws caution to the wind. And I don't think he always has the smartest approach when he fights as well. This is a tough one for me. I guess I'm going to go with Stefan Struve. I imagine that this fight will probably go to the mat at some point, I think. So I'll go with Struve.
And I will tell you guys, I always tweet out the odds for every UFC main card fight. So you both reserve the right to change your predictions based upon the odds. If you see something really pronounced and it makes sense under our scoring system, by all means, text me and let me know. All right, main event. This is a bigger fight than people realize. If John Jones beats Anthony Smith, the winner of this fight between Jan Błachowicz and Thiago Santos is going to get a light heavyweight championship opportunity. And the way John Jones is treating his 2019, these guys might fight for the light heavyweight title before July. So huge steam on this main event in Prague. Wes, we will need the round and the method of victory, Błachowicz or Santos, for you.
I am really excited for this fight. I think Jan Błachowicz is underappreciated in that light heavyweight division. He has been on quite a tear, 4-fight win streak. He's looked good in all of them. His last fight against Nikita, he weathered a little storm early, ended up getting that finish. I think that his best path to victory would definitely be taking the fight to the ground, looking for a submission. His submissions are high quality. Thiago Santos, he is one of the most dangerous strikers in the whole UFC, in my opinion. A scary guy to stand in front of. I think Santos needs to stay at kicking range. If he can do that, I think he has potential to really pick Błachowicz apart. I think that Błachowicz or Santos need to come in with that same game plan he came in with against Jimmy Manoa, where there were new holes barred. He came out guns blazing, ready to go, get in his face early, put his back against the cage, and just start swinging. I think that's Santos' best path to victory here. Błachowicz, he's got power, but I wouldn't say he has the one punch knockout power that Manoa does, and Santos just threw caution to the wind against him. I see him doing the same thing against Błachowicz, and I say he's going to get a second round TKO.
Ken Flo loves that round too, so he might be upset about that. All right, Wes Stowers, thank you for listening, man. Thank you for playing. And as I said, man, you beat Ken Flo. You're right back in the queue later in 2019. Thanks for stepping up. Have a good day at work, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
I really appreciate it. Today's my little sister's birthday, so I just want to say happy birthday, Maddie. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully I'll be on again soon.
Thank you, Wes. Happy birthday, Maddie. All right, good stuff there from the great state of West Virginia. So, Kempf, I'm excited about this main event. I think I'm excited to just shut my fat mouth and watch it for a change, right? It's been a busy schedule. Obviously, we're in a stretch of 9 consecutive weekends with live UFC action. But Thiago Santos, man, right? Go to his Wikipedia page. Go to SureDog, right? He's won 7 of 8. 6 of those by knockout or TKO, right? We sit here Feb 18, 2019, February 3rd, 2018, right? A year and a few days ago, he knocked out Anthony Smith, who's fighting for the championship in a couple weeks. Unanimous decision win over Kevin Holland. That's a quality win. Finished Eric Anders, quality win. Destroyed Jimmy Manoa recently. Dude's on an absolute tear. Błachowicz has won 4 in a row. I think Santos will probably be the favorite, but Błachowicz is no picnic, obviously. This is a great main event, and I want to know on which side of it you fall.
Oh, man. So Błachowicz, I feel like, is the more well-rounded fighter. As far as consistency, being a little bit more conservative, maybe not conservative, but safer. I would typically lean towards someone like that. I think he has the advantage on the ground as well. And I think that the fact that he hasn't been in a lot of these crazy fights like Thiago Santos has had can give him the advantage as well. So this is a tough one for me. Thiago Santos is a guy who basically ignores all the small weapons. He says, like, you know what? I'm just going to blow out the cannon every single time. I want to destroy your face as much as possible. And I love it. But here's the thing. How long can he keep this kind of pace for? And how is his body going from fight to fight and training camp to training camp? He has kept very busy. I hope that he's fine. And if he is, I think he gets the win here. I don't know if Thiago Santos is the best striker in the UFC or one of the better strikers in the UFC, but he's probably one of the most dangerous strikers in the UFC. And I think there's a difference. And I think if he catches Błachowicz, I think he's in trouble. Błachowicz, and I agree with Wes that Błachowicz doesn't have the same kind of striking ability, does have a good chin, though. And, you know, if they get caught trading, Santos is probably going to get the win. So I'll go with Santos. I think that he has this energy and ability to really draw guys into his type of fight. And I got to go with Santos. I think the train's going to keep running here.
All right, give me a round and a method. You going knockout or TKO, I assume?
Let's go knockout round two.
All right, that's exactly what Wes did with the round
two. Okay, well, let's do round one. Let's do round one. No, yeah, we got to make it interesting.
So the busy schedule, right? So five fights in 2018 for Maheta, February, April, August, September, and then December in Toronto against Jimmy Manoa. So you're right about the busy schedule for sure. Obviously, he's at 205 now, right? So he's not cutting the weight anymore. And what's crazy about his 2018, right? Those five fights, Kenny, and then a weight cut in July to back up for Adesanya Tavares. Do you remember that?
Right.
So
yes, that's
five
right.
fights, wow. But then a sixth, essentially, just for show money, he cut as a backup. So
wow.
This is a motivated man. And yeah, man, he, you know, you talk about jiu-jitsu application in MMA, the striking application for Thiago Santos is going quite well. And big spot for him, obviously, against Jan Błachowicz. All right, that's it for the main event challenge. So Ken Flo is a renaissance man of sorts. He's got a lot of irons in the fire. Meraki BJJ is a fucking monster, by the way.
Thank you.
I mean, I would say standing room only, like, need not apply, but, you know, we want, you know, I don't want to hurt the business, but man, I mean, it's just a beautiful facility. It actually makes me want to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
See, that's the goal. Thank you, my man. And we're going to get you over there. Next time you're in L.A., we're going to put you in a gi over there and run you through a class.
Pahumpa, Marcos D'Amata, he was in Phoenix. Is that where I was about 6 hours ago? Phoenix.
Not returning your calls. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, so he was in Phoenix to corner Henan Barão. And he's like, hey, you got the mats in the garage yet? It's like, no, bro, I don't have the mats in the garage.
I keep cars in the garage, okay? I'm not like you sticking jiu-jitsu guys. Yeah.
I got a fucking treadmill in the garage. So anyway, so Ken Flo, a lot of different things going on. Entrepreneur in spirit and in action. So you got a new app called Closer Sports. And I think the Anakin Florian podcast listeners would really like to hear about it right now.
Yeah, no, thank you, man. You know, last week, actually, we launched a new live streaming show on Closer Sports. And basically, you can live chat with me and hopefully hoping to get a ton of the MMA analysts and fighters and coaches to come over. I know Michael Bisping's going to be on there, Daniel Cormier and Tyron Woodley and all those guys hope to be on there soon. And we've been testing it out and it's pretty slick. You could chat just like you can on Instagram Live, and you can also suggest topics to discuss and vote on. And for those of you guys who have iPhones, the app is in the App Store right now, and you can go to closersports.com or go straight to the App Store and search for Closer Sports. And for those of you on Android, the app should hit this week. I can keep you guys posted on that. And to kick things off, we'll be offering a special price of 99 cents per month. So less than a dollar. You could follow, you know, your favorite fighters and stuff like that. And I'll actually be streaming another show this week. And I kind of, you know, basically answer questions that the fans have. And anything you want to talk about, we can break down. I'm also hoping to do some MMA breakdowns on there at Meraki and do some jiu-jitsu breakdowns and techniques as well, which is always fun to do. And, you know, I encourage everyone to check it out. And also, we populate all the news articles to just that one app. So everything related to mixed martial arts, you can see all of your articles, all the latest articles right there to that app. So it's kind of like becoming a mixed martial arts hub. And, yeah, I hope the fans love it. And we'd love to hear your feedback as well and how we can make it better.
So if you're on the gray mats at Meraki BJJ and you're showing people a Kimura sweep, that content is exclusive to Closer Sports, right?
Exactly. And then even you guys, let's say as I'm doing it, you could ask me a detail or a question, say, hey, how do you like to do this? Or what's the grip like? And, you know, what do you do if they do this? And we can go through all the different scenarios of the breakdowns and have some fun that way, man. So it's a cool way to interact. And basically, you know, it's kind of Instagram Live on steroids, if you will.
I like that, man.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I'm not going to watch the video of you doing a Kimura sweep, but I know a lot of people out there.
You got to learn, John. Damn.
I'm going to watch that shit. Hey, yeah, no, I mean, I know what that is, right? I mean, I trained to do that 6 or 7 times.
I just want to see in those white pajamas, for Pete's sake. Come on.
Oh, man. I think maybe the gi wasn't necessarily my problem. I just think I'm just not tough enough physically, mentally, or otherwise.
You have a ridiculous schedule, dude. You got 3 kids, for Pete's
sake. Oh, I mean,
Yeah, and you work, too. Yeah.
I do lead the league in excuses, right? Best thing about having kids, you got an excuse. Anytime you don't want to do anything, bro, I got fucking kids. You know?
Three of them.
Yeah, but like, you tell me you haven't in the first year of True's life been able to use that as an excuse for something you didn't want to do at one point in time. I mean,
right.
if that's not the truth, you know. So it's great, though. It is when you don't want to do something socially or you can't pick up the phone. Dude, I got
kids.
Yeah. I got kids, plural. All right, we got to get out of here. Thanks for putting up with me today. It's been a crazy stretch for the UFC. It continues, of course, this weekend in Prague, Czech Republic. Prelims are on ESPN2. Main card on ESPN+. The Flo and I will be back in less than a week to recap that with you. And I don't even have to look at the UFC calendar, but I'm sure there's a show the next weekend. There is. It is UFC 235. And we'll get you ready for that monster. Ken Flo, enjoy the rest of your time on the East Coast, man. Welcome back.
Thanks, my dude. Yeah, I'm here in Virginia training with the wizard, Ryan Hall. And looking forward to having some fun out here doing some seminars. And
All right, with that, for the flow and our fine producer, TJ DeSantis, John Anik saying so long for now. Until next week, enjoy the fights. Don't text and drive. Yo, fucking later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.